Hello again and welcome to another episode of Voices from SA. My name is Nicholas Claude. I hope you're keeping well wherever you are. Thanks for listening. The Patreon page is up and running, finally. So to support this project, please go to www.patreon.com/voices from SA, all one word, lowercase. There are a number of different patron options that I have to admit I'm not quite clear on. I didn't really want to set too many demands on yourselves or myself, quite honestly. Essentially, I'm asking you to support the podcast for the price of a coffee or two per episode. But yeah, feel free to pay as much as you like, as often as you like. It's just an effort to get this podcast to pay for itself and also allow me to travel a little more widely across South Africa, spread my wings a little. I feel sometimes I'm a little bit constrained here in Johannesburg. My guest this week is the consultant and entrepreneur, Bertha Dlamini. It turns out I first met Bertha some years back in 2012 when I was looking for a job in corporate communications. She was running a consultancy, Rito Consulting at the time. To quote her LinkedIn profile, Bertha is an entrepreneur with interests in the energy, transport, telecommunications, and management consulting sectors, delivering solutions and systems for utilities. She's also the president of an NPO, non-profit organization, called Women in Electricity and Power, and that, again, to quote LinkedIn, aims to accelerate the participation of women, African women entrepreneurs in the full value chain of power and energy in Africa and contribute towards addressing the continent's energy poverty. So very relevant, both in terms of sort of empowering women in the economy, economic power, so initiatives, and also sort of dealing with the power poverty, energy poverty, the struggles of the energy infrastructure on the continent. We in South Africa have been facing some of that recently with blackouts. We had a great discussion about the importance of mentors in the early stages of her career. Affirmative action, she was sort of got into work in the very early stages of that initiative in South Africa. Some of the challenges facing entrepreneurs, particularly women in South Africa, and her hopes and dreams for women in electricity and power, and her belief that women can transform this and many other sectors of the economy, given the right tools and support. So please now enjoy my chat with Bertha. Bertha, hi, good afternoon. And
good afternoon, Nicholas.
Thank you for your time.
You're most welcome.
I can't even remember when I started trying to set this interview up, but you're a very busy person, an entrepreneur, a stakeholder management strategist, the president of African Women in Electricity and Power, which is an NPO
NPO.
And then you're also starting this Gen X Theatre. It's up and running.
It's up and running. And Gen X Theatre.
Yeah. Okay. So that's and you're doing your executive MBA at UCT. So not much going on in your life at the moment.
No, not at all. Not at all.
And you say you're not feeling well. So I'm sorry to barge in on you, but you are traveling. Is it next week? You said you're out of the country again, or is it for your UCT?
No, tomorrow I'll be at UCT for 15 days.
Yes, right. Yes. So that's your first first section of the year. I think you said every quarter you go down.
Every quarter we go down for 15 days.
We can. I'd like to talk a little bit about that a little bit later on. Sure. But I think the we chatted about a week ago just to sort of set this up, and I told you I was going through my emails, and I think when I first moved back from Sweden, we'd had some contact, and I think I was about to come and start doing some work for you at Rito Consulting, and I got the assignment at Ericsson, and I sort of looked at the email, and I felt quite bad that I'd sort of let you down, but that didn't stop you from building an empire.
Well, not an empire as such, but yes, at the time we were a small enterprise.
It was 2012, I think.
That was 2012. Rito Consulting Services was started in 2006, mm-hmm. a fully fledged marketing communications consultancy. We also looked at strategic change management solutions for our clients. And we serviced both public and private sector clients. And that company I founded in 2006, as I said, and operated it until 2012, when through a Black Economic Empowerment transaction, I formed a partnership with a consulting company at the time called Eon Consulting, which was an engineering consulting firm offering energy consulting services to a number of utilities in Southern Africa, cutting across the entire energy production value chain, or electricity production value chain, from generation to distribution. And offering consulting services that literally enabled utilities to function optimally and plugging into different verticals of the energy value chain. So that consulting firm, at the time when I joined it, I think it was about 15 years that they had been operating in the energy space of very astute engineers, information technology specialists, economists that looked at different very complex utility power utility challenges.
Even that, back then.
Yes, and that really introduced me to the energy space. I was very fortunate to work with exceptional engineers that were happy to share their knowledge with me, and were happy to endure my inquisitive mind and my unending process of inquiry on the different areas of disciplines within the consulting firm. And truly that is how I got the opportunity to learn about the different services that are feasible for a consulting firm within the energy space. And so we had that relationship for 5 years. In 2014, I was appointed their managing director. It was truly an expansion of my entrepreneurial competency in that space, and perhaps in a more complex environment than within my consulting firm, where I had autonomy over a number of solutions that were delivered for our clients. So that takes us to about 2016. During that that period, also what I achieved was I was invited to sit on a number of advisory boards for international energy conferences, influencing the content that was delivered by those conferences, together with other energy stakeholders from across the world, especially from the continent.
Right. And that gave me able to bring an African, South African perspective to the content.
Yeah, it was pretty much global perspective to energy challenges with a focus on what is relevant for the continent, because an energy conference like the Power Gen Africa conference focused on the entire continent and brought competent specialists from all over the world to share insights into the possible solutions for energy and electricity on the continent. Africa Utility Week also looked at a broad spectrum of utility specialists across the globe that could look at solutions that are possible for African utilities to improve their services and to improve their ability to, one, generate, transmit, and distribute electricity, understanding the emerging technology options that were available to them. The Power and Electricity World Show, along the same lines as well. And so by participating at an advisory board level, I also got further exposure into really the complex world of energy science, so to speak.
If I could go back some time, what is your background, did you study engineering yourself?
I didn't. You know, this is the fascination about my career. I studied marketing. My foundational qualification is marketing. And I have also qualified in management practices. So I did the management advancement program with VETS back into VETS University in South Africa. I did the management development program with Gibbs. So I've had the benefit of one of the two renowned universities in the country on management practice. And I've had a number of specialist courses. I'm a certified ProSci Change practitioner, for example. And I've done a management diploma with the Netherlands Chamber of Commerce and Confederation of Employers in Holland. And so that gave me a broad management experience and competence, so to speak.
Have you always been a high achiever? Have you always been throwing yourself at a lot of things? I mean, at high school, what kind of student were you?
At high school, I had the privilege of being a second class of a private school in Limpopo, in Giani, called Kanyisa Education Center. And we were 13 in class.
Whoa.
And
that's unusual.
It was unusual. It was back in, 1992? 1991, I joined the school. So we had the benefit of the full attention of our teachers.
Yeah.
And we had the benefit of full, untethered inquiry amongst ourselves and with our teachers. Was I very active? Yes, I was very active. I was involved in sports. I was an avid netball player. I was an athlete. I did long jump, high jump. I raced.
And you got A's along the way as well.
I tried. Yes, I did get some distinctions here and there.
What was that? I mean, you know, there's always the sort of innate ability that you have, that you're born with, I suppose, but. What role do you think your parents or your sort of upbringing played in that desire to achieve? I mean, can you tell me a little bit about your family and your parents?
Look, just to close off my high school career as well, I did a lot of community work as well. I did a lot of teenage engagement around sex education and HIV AIDS back in the day through beauty pageants. Yes, my family played a very big role in what I have become. My grandmother lost her husband, I think she was age 33, and she was left with 6 children to raise.
Oh.
And she was a hardworking woman. She didn't only raise the 6 children, but she raised an entire community. So much that when she passed in 1996, she was buried by the community.
Beautiful.
A lot of people whom she had taken through school, who were professionals, came back to honor her life.
Amazing.
My uncle was one of the first pharmacists in the area, and still is.
This is in Limpopo. Is that where you grew up?
Yeah. And still runs one of the few link pharmacies, pharmacists in Limpopo. Very dedicated businessman. My mother was and is a dedicated health professional, who has run psychiatric hospitals, who has run the most difficult hospitals in the district as a CEO. And so I was raised amongst people who desired to achieve the best they could. And I suppose that also inspired me. We were not a wealthy family, by no means. But my grandmother and my mother emphasized the importance of education and doing well at school. And that's what I tried to do, and I hope my parents are proud today.
Because it seems, I mean, you said that school that you went to afforded you that ability and space to be inquiring, ask questions, and perhaps go places that I suppose a lot of even the school I went to was so structured and so kind of conservative in their processes and in the way they treated the students. It seemed you had a lot more freedom, and I'm just wondering how that sort of played out in your post school.
I think that what the teachers tried to instill in us was that you could lead your life and you could achieve whatever you put your effort in. They did allow us to explore. I remember an exercise that was an exercise of painting that was it was painting and building. I remember building animals out of material. And it was an art class, but there was no restriction. I ended up with a silver, gold, and royal blue bird.
Yeah.
You know, I suppose that said you could be anything that you wanted to be. It was in a remote area. Giani is a rural township.
Mm.
And so the excitement of being allowed and enabled to question, your teachers, to question the work you are given, the provision of resources to explore how far you can go with your research as early as in high school, that really triggered a lot of curiosity in terms of what is possible.
Did you feel then that you were a little bit different to the students then that you encountered at university in your first year, for example? I mean, in terms of their way of working and your way of working?
Sure. So as much as I was admitted to a number of universities, because I came from a single parent home, I was quite cognizant of the fact that I needed to work as quickly as possible to lessen the financial burden that my mother had to raise my sister and I. And so I went to a technicon and not a university for my first qualification. So I qualified with a national diploma in marketing, right, at Cape Technicon.
Okay, you went to the Cape.
In Cape Town. And at Cape Technicon, students came from everywhere. So I was neither unique, but we were all different. And we brought different experiences from different towns and different backgrounds. Mm. And at the time in 1995... This was right after, the dawn of
independence.
Democracy and independence. So a lot of our classes were still in Afrikaans, which was quite difficult. We did statistics in Afrikaans. I had no clue.
No.
So that's a subject I had to repeat. And that's the kind of environment that we came from. So there was a lot we shared. There were students that came from Upington that had never been in close contact with black students. And we became very good friends because we learned to appreciate each other's backgrounds, at least those of us who ventured out to have those relationships.
Who had the freedom. Yeah,
Who ventured out to break away from the mold of their social upbringing, and had the curiosity to form the relationship. We've got an ice cream
van. Yay!
Going past.
That took me back to my childhood. My goodness.
And so, right. So I wouldn't necessarily say that was that different.
Mm.
I think I was different enough to be part of a community.
Yeah. And exactly, to have that freedom of imagination to speak to people outside of your sort of experience,
I suppose.
Yeah. Because that 1995, I mean, what was your sense then for yourself and your future at that moment? I mean,
so three of my aunts are married in Switzerland. Back in the 80s. And so in 1992, my mom took all of her savings and took us on a holiday, a five-week holiday in Switzerland, Basel.
My goodness.
Which gave us an exposure of a totally different world. It's almost like everything that you read in a fairy tale book.
Yeah, I was going to say.
At the time.
Like a dreamland.
all fairy tale books related a European story and not an African story at all. So it was almost as if you were walking into Alice in Wonderland, right? So that exposure was phenomenal. It was truly a life-changing experience. So when I traveled all the way to Cape Town for the first time to study, I didn't suffer a cultural shock because I had the exposure
of that,
prior.
Of that.
And I suppose I had an interesting story to share with a lot of people. So the sense of self that I had when I was studying was that I can contribute. I can contribute to any course where I devote myself. So that was never something I challenged. And so it was easy for me to immerse myself into my studies, into my assignments, with the objective to experience it, to experience something tangible. So true as the commitment went, by end of 1997, I was employed. And I started my career at a research firm as a research analyst in Cape Town as part of my in-service training. I came to Johannesburg for the first time in 1998. I was always in Johannesburg in transit to somewhere. But to leave and study further in Johannesburg, that was in 1998. And
I get the sense Johannesburg was quite vibrant back in those days.
It was.
I didn't live here myself, but a lot of my friends moved from Durban around about that time. And I get a sense that there was a real buzz about the place.
It was. And during that time, I think the affirmative action had just started, right? So I joined Research Surveys at the time. I think the company still exists in a different form now. And shortly after, I realized that I was packing boxes of presentations. And every now and then, when an account executive had the time, I could produce a PowerPoint presentation. But I spent a lot of the time self-learning, so to speak, by teaching myself a lot of things, but nothing meaningful. So I wrote to a couple of advertising agencies. I remember at the end of that year, at the end of 1998, looking for work, or mid-1998, I can't remember the time exactly. It was end of 1998. And this particular Gendel Advertising and Marketing, I wrote to them, and when I went to an interview and I asked that he does not give me an affirmative action position, but in fact he trains me. In fact, I was not interested in the salary. I was interested in knowing how to do the work. And as he would relate the story later, that's what got me the job.
When you say affirmative action position, I mean, what are you saying there?
My understanding of that
at that time,
affirmative action at that time, was I was a cost.
A tick box put you there.
And you would never have anything meaningful to do. And I didn't want that. I wanted to have client interface. I wanted to add value in clients' business. I wanted to understand the workings.
Well, you wanted to learn and become a professional yourself.
Absolutely.
But,
Mike Gundel was an awesome teacher. He was a hard man. That was a shock. I had never been driven that hard ever in my life and in your face.
Demanding.
He was demanding the absolute best of everything. From how you dressed, how you look, how you spoke, your research, your synthesis, speaking about things you understood. he was not interested in written work that you didn't understand. He demanded that you spoke from knowledge. I spent 10 months with him and I was near breaking point. He drove me that hard, but that was the most amazing foundation of knowing how to start a project and how to finish it. Knowing that you research what you don't know, knowing the art of synthesis, knowing that you have to show up, knowing that you have to earn your stripes. I don't know how many times I cried in his office.
Sure.
And he had no care for my tears. And the one time he said, when you're struggling, you come to my home on Saturday and tell me how you're struggling.
So he was open all the time for you.
Yes. And I went, 8 o'clock sharp, I was at the gate in a Lani suburb that I never thought I would ever live in. And he sat down and he taught me the art of writing an advertising strategy, of writing a communications plan and the difference between the two. It was a sacrifice that I made for my weekends, but it was the most fascinating learning journey.
And your experience then as a young black woman professional, how was that?
I worked with other young black professionals at the Microfinance Regulatory Council, so it was not apparent.
I'm just thinking again in the context of affirmative action, and
it was a quasi government agency.
Yeah.
It was not apparent at the time. When I left and I joined Kagiso Communication and TV, it was also still not really apparent. It was an innovative environment. We did a lot of interesting work around consumer education. I joined, later joined the communications firm, TCF, led and founded by Given Mkari, as head of corporate communications. Again, expanding their repertoire of skills around client management, business management, worked with the most phenomenal brains, still not apparent. And later on in 2006, when I started my consulting firm, I had this wealth of experience around stakeholder management. I was also an avid researcher. I enjoy creating things. I enjoy research.
You have that curiosity about the world around you.
I do. I do, absolutely. I'm fearless. I'm totally fearless, which is good. Could be a good thing and a bad thing. But I will push boundaries as far as I can.
Sure, I need a bit of that.
And so I knew starting my own business would not be easy, but I knew that the worst thing that could happen is I would sell off my house, I would sell off my car, and go and work from my mother's garage in Bulukwan, and I was quite happy with that possibility. One thing I was certain of is I was not giving up. I was going to be an entrepreneur. I was going to offer the services that I have learned to offer to clients. And I had a lot of people who were willing to support that journey. Previous employers, new customers. I relished the opportunity to build a solution for a customer and to go through the tendering process and to bid and to compete and to win and then to execute and see it come to life. I enjoyed that. It was something that I wouldn't give up.
I want to talk a little bit about entrepreneurship and just what you see as the role. Well, maybe just sort of get a sense of the world that entrepreneurs, particularly in South Africa, operate in, because you get the sense that, you know, there's a lot of lip service paid to the possible role that entrepreneurs can play in sort of driving the economy, or at least transitioning the economy into something that it's not today. What do you see as sort of the role of entrepreneurs and the challenges that entrepreneurs in South Africa particularly face?
South Africa needs to ignite even further the spirit of entrepreneurship. We need to fight the scourge of entitlement and drive the spirit of I can do this. Mm. That's number one. So it's there's a drive that will require that I can, that not that somebody can do it for me, I can first. Number two is what enabled my journey was a lot of mentors that I found in my journey. And I say I found because when I identified that they were doing great things, I reached out and I was very clear on what I was asking for.
Mm.
And so we need mentors.
And they were willing to give that knowledge.
They were willing to give. Now, here's the thing about finding a mentor. You need to find a mentor who's truly interested in your growth without any other interest. In other words, your growth must be independent of their journey. If I am coaching you for you to do something for me, that relationship will soon collapse.
Mm.
It must purely be a relationship where your success matters more than my personal interest. And I was fortunate to find mentors who, in the main, so 95%, were interested in my success and could challenge my thinking and gave me a safe place to be vulnerable about my blind spots and the things I didn't enjoy, so that I could find the support I required to complement those weak areas. Now, so that's one. I had the fortune that I was trained by people who were committed to their roles in the organizations where I worked. Gabriel Davil was a CA, Peter Stowe was a lawyer. So working with a CA and a lawyer, you can imagine what happens. And so I never had, in the beginning of my entrepreneurial journey, to apply for financing. Not a lot of entrepreneurs have that fortune.
Mm.
And so the reality to apply for finance, to secure financing, is a real daunting task and a challenge. That's number one. Being in a network of other entrepreneurs that can lead you and open doors for you is not a privilege that everybody has. And so as we battle this subdued economy, the networks shrink even more. Access to finance is a challenge.
The possibilities become fewer and fewer.
The possibilities become fewer and fewer. And as our state-owned entities battle issues of governance, issues of delivery and accountability, the entrepreneur suffers because it reduces the number of opportunities available for entrepreneurs. Mm. When the economy shrinks, it means the big players that have the resources are also playing in small areas for survival that typically would be
the space for
entrepreneurs to play in. Mm. So suddenly you are competing with the big guys and your chances of success are very little. We don't have a lot of role models, not entrepreneurs that are also called tenderpreneurs, but entrepreneurs that have organically grown their businesses. And so you don't find a lot of practical entrepreneurial training that will teach you how to put together your proposals, that will teach you thinking patterns. When you put together a proposal, what does it mean? How do you put together a compelling proposition for a client? What are the aspects that you need to consider? There's also not a lot of support that bridges students coming from university straight into entrepreneurship. That assignment that you were writing about that project, the discipline that you covered, are applicable in your entrepreneurial journey. Not technically exactly, but they are applicable, right? And how do you transition from your school to work?
The sort of theory to practice kind
theory
of.
To practice, that bridge between from theory to practice.
Well, I think, I mean, that's a good place for us to now look at Power and Electricity and Power, African Women in Electricity and Power in particular. But, you know, you're talking about sort of trying to facilitate this non-profit that you formed. And I think what you say, it's in how many African countries?
So African Women in Power and Energy was also formed out of observing that at international conferences, energy and power conferences, you don't find a lot of female speakers, so female experts, not on panels of discussions, not as keynote speakers for technical solutions. You also don't find female-owned businesses on the exhibition floor or the energy and power sector. There are a myriad of reasons that is the case. And I wanted to use my experience in the energy sector as managing director for a consulting firm in the energy sector to say, what are the challenges that I faced? And how can I use those lessons to help other women that are interested, who are not engineers, who are entrepreneurs, who are interested to participate in the energy and power sector. Then I also wanted to find out what context exists that makes female participation in the energy and power sector a business case. So on the continent, 620 million people don't have access to electricity. The hardest hit sections of the population is women and youth, who often have to travel miles to fetch wood to provide energy. Number three, the electricity grid of the continent is dominated by global firms for many years, for hundreds of years, not by local African firms. Number four is women make up at least 52% of untapped potential, economic potential on the continent in terms of talent, capacity. And the same is true for youth, especially on the continent. Okay. Another reason or another compelling factor is that many studies that support the fact that companies with women-led boards and management teams show better performance than companies that are not transformed from a gender parity perspective. So all those compelling factors. And also, women make up the greatest number of entrepreneurs on the continent. And that one could say, yes, it's in the informal sector, but the truth is that is the case.
Yeah, right. Of course, yeah.
So how can we tap into this latent potential? So I looked at the energy sector and I said, what happened to me? I learned. I was exposed to the energy value chain through the consulting services that we offered. And I got to understand the services that could that are offered to a utility in generation. But if you just take it from a practical angle, from when you walk through the gate of a power plant to when you sit at reception to when you go to the boilers to when they dispose wastewater, there is a value chain that exists and vertical markets within that value chain. And I realized that what we need to do is to educate women on the entire value chain of electricity production. Generation, different sources of generation, fossil fuel, solar, hydro, biomass, wind, and educate them on those technologies and how they work and how utilities procure such technologies and how they manage their generation mix. Educate women on the transmission of electricity and the opportunities that exist. Open that entire value chain and say a utility that owns a transmission line procures the following assets and services and systems and processes and require the following competencies in order for them to run an optimal transmission line.
And you're going right down to the nitty-gritty then.
Right down like to the nitty-gritty.
The pylon, the screws that
everything.
Fix the pylon together.
Because somebody owns that market today. Somebody is delivering those services, those products, those systems, those processes, those tools, those services. So let's open them up. When you educate people on opportunities, people are triggered and inspired to innovate. And they can offer alternatives. But as long as they don't know what exists, they can't even seek the right partners to give themselves a chance to participate. Let's open the distribution value chain. And when you educate people on the opportunities that exist, the bidding process, the financing solutions and instruments that exist for such services and systems and products, they're able to direct their effort to building the right networks. They can partner with a global firm. They can become channel partners for some of the products. They get the opportunity to be trained as channel partners and therefore bid for the service. And that's how you open the market for them. So this is what I talk when I say practical bridging
barriers
the gap
in a practical way,
and breaking the barriers in a practical way. Let's make critical information accessible to youth, to women. Give them the chance to opt out if they're not interested, but at least give them something to opt out of.
I suppose my reaction would be it's a kind of the reality, though, might be sort of innovation hitting the brick wall of policy and bureaucracy. And if we look at South Africa as an example, where we are in our current energy crisis and the inability of the government, it seems, to open its mind to the possibilities of alternative energy, despite the IPPs that we talk about and all that, just does not seem to be happening.
So,
or have I got it wrong?
It is true that in different markets on the continent, the policy environment is either non-existent or not mature enough for gender participation, gender mainstreaming, and for the introduction of new technology. It is true. But the other reality is, as policy progresses, you need to have a pool of participants ready to take advantage of the opportunities that will be opened up by emerging policies as the regulatory regime changes to accommodate different energy technologies. You need a pool of participants that are available, that are ready to take advantage of those opportunities. But also, you need a pool of educated, interested entrepreneurs that can challenge the existing regime to accommodate new technology. So either way, you have to educate youth and women on the workings of the energy sector, to give them an opportunity to inquire, to question, to choose areas they're interested to explore further, to participate. And so African Women in Energy and Power's vision is, through our mobilization campaign, we are now in 10 countries. We're targeting 22 countries. In 10 countries, as we have support from the Southern African Power Pool, and through that support, we can reach out, and we do reach out to member utilities to come and talk about their project pipelines, their strategy for transitioning into modern utilities with a diverse energy mix, with looking at automation and digitalization of their environment, their ecosystem, their systems, their processes. Come and talk to us about your journey so that we know that such opportunities exist. Come and talk to us about your procurement process so that we know what we need to how we need to qualify for the bidding process and how we need to manage it. Come and talk to us about your gender mainstreaming policy so that we know what market you've designated for women within your utility. Because utilities remain the drivers, the main drivers still, of opportunities in the energy and power
the
sector.
The state utilities, state-owned, you would say.
Yes.
I suppose my response to that is just the power generation infrastructure of Africa seems so almost inefficient.
Yeah, there are parts of it, in the main, yes. Aging infrastructure is a challenge.
There's very few countries across the continent that have a regular, and even now South Africa, a regular, reliable power grid.
Yes. So you've got the challenge of aging infrastructure. You've got the challenge of asset management. You've got the challenge of interconnectedness of the grid in areas where there is no connectivity, or there is no connected grid in areas that are too remote to receive power. You've got issues of operational management, such as the kind we see with Eskom, that is constraining reliable supply of energy. Right? Those are challenges with solutions that women can participate in offering. Women can offer revenue management solutions. Women can offer asset management solutions. Women can offer communication networks over the grid. Women can offer program management and project management. There is a lot.
There's nothing they can't, yeah.
Women can offer smart metering solutions. Women can offer off-grid solutions, distributed energy resources. They can do that as well. So our commitment is to educate women entrepreneurs on the energy ecosystem, how it works, who are the stakeholders, who are the main technology players, who are the utilities, how do they procure services, solutions, products, and systems. What are they planning to procure in the next 3 to 5 years? And who can you partner with to be part of those projects? When you're part of a project, even if you're delivering 10%, you get exposure to technology, you learn its execution, you discover how things work, and you can innovate. You create jobs through the contracts that you get.
Mm.
Women can participate in environmental impact assessments.
Yeah.
There's so much that the value chains are enormous and they're emerging.
Yeah, I suppose that's the point, isn't it? And especially when it comes to alternative forms of energy, there must be just because it's just hasn't even, I mean, it's at 0%, isn't it, really? So the potential there must be absolutely massive.
Utilities are also at a phase where they can no longer operate the way they've been operating for the past 50, 60 years.
A bit like telecommunications companies 20 years ago when deregulation took place.
Yes, but utilities have to modernize. They have to find new revenue streams.
Innovate.
They have to innovate. The customer is changing. The customer can opt out of the grid. They can deflect and they can install solar panels, for example, and have their own generate their own power.
Mm.
And so this provides opportunities, consulting opportunities, system provision opportunities for utilities as they transition into the new business model. The consumer profile is not only male, is male, female, and young. And because the consumer profile is so diverse, those diverse consumers can bring innovation to utilities. They can enterprise, but they need to know what they're dealing with. They need to know how the energy market is structured in their environment, in their country. They need to know how to manage an energy project. What are the penalties that apply? How they manage those penalties? Where they get insurance for their project? Where they get financing for projects? How they can package their projects for bankability so that they have a better chance of securing finance? Different financial financing instruments available for energy projects. They need to know the impact of the fourth industrial revolution in the energy sector. What's happening with digitalization of systems and assets? What's happening with automation? What technologies are being introduced? What's the state of readiness of utilities for such technologies? Where can they play? Who they can partner with? Right? They need to know how to apply for finance. They need to know how to run their business, how to write a business plan, how to build a pipeline of business opportunities, how to grade the opportunities within the pipeline so that they invest effort.
Yes, with prioritization.
Prioritization. They need to know how to market their business. They need to know how to network. They need to know the law of energy, the legal aspects of energy, so they can protect their projects, their relationship with utilities, their relationship with partners, and protect their business. So we have a partnership with African Leadership University, and we are building a tailored entrepreneurial accelerator that looks at these aspects for women. So you walk in as one woman, you walk out with 99 connections. So we're targeting 100 women a year.
Right.
We could even start with 30 women for the first cohort, for the first class. It will be a great achievement.
Building a network.
And we are saying to energy companies, global energy companies that want to continue to operate on the continent, partner with women and young entrepreneurs. Train them as channel partners on different energy products and systems. take advantage of their contextual understanding of the market, the local market, and the stakeholder base. But partner with them, give them access to technology. Train them on the technology so that they actually have a chance to participate in the
And give
agency.
Them some agency as well then.
Precisely. And so so you walk in as one woman, right? You walk in as one woman, you walk out with 99 connections of other women entrepreneurs who are interested in working in the electricity space. You walk out with a business pipeline from the utilities that shall have presented their project pipelines during our entrepreneurial accelerator. So you walk out not knowing how the sector is structured. You now know how the sector is structured, where the challenges are, who the stakeholders are, and what the utilities in the environment are targeting to achieve in the next 3 to 5 years. Mm. That's already invaluable information that is packaged to enable your success. You also walk out with potential business partners,
right,
to take advantage of opportunities that exist in different markets on the continent,
yeah,
right?
Mm.
You walk out with a credible network of potential financiers that would have presented their master classes on how they finance energy projects, what they look for, and how those who want to pitch for their type of financing should package their projects.
Brilliant.
Yeah. You walk out understanding the law of energy and the legal firms that deliver services in the energy sector so that you can already form a relationship with them. So you walk out really empowered to go out in the market and start to navigate. Mm. We are inviting original equipment manufacturers, we are inviting project developers, we are inviting telecommunications companies, we're inviting software, enterprise software developers, we are inviting all large-scale service providers to the electricity utility market to pledge support for women entrepreneurs, to partner with women entrepreneurs as channel partners and offer women entrepreneurs the opportunity to walk through this journey.
Mm. It's very exciting.
And that is the vision that we have, that progressively over the years you will have women entrepreneurs that not only operate in the periphery of the energy market, providing solar home systems, which is a critical aspect of electrification in the rural market. We're saying come upstream, women can also participate in sophisticated, complex solutions in the energy space.
Mm.
And with the Sustainable Development Goal number 5, which is gender equality, the UN is driving all nations and is driving the continent to look at gender mainstreaming and gender equality in various sectors.
Mm.
Right? And different Kenya is leading with its 30% designation for women entrepreneurs. We need to create a pool of women to go and take advantage of that designation.
Right.
South Africa, according to the latest McKinsey gender parity report, is leading in terms of gender mainstreaming with 66%, I think that's what it said.
Oh, good.
But we need to dig deep into the vertical markets of industry and look at the penetration of women participants. Mm-hmm. And in the energy space, I am convinced that the numbers are a lot lower.
Not quite there, yeah.
Right?
Right.
And so when you speak to a lot of electricity utilities and you question their procurement budget and you look at who are the vendors that they have on board, you will find that women and youth make up a small percentage.
Mm.
And so we're saying to private sector and to government, let's work hand in glove to build the pool of competent women and young entrepreneurs that can participate in the energy sector. I am convinced that when we increase the number of women participants as entrepreneurs in the energy space, we will should also see the rate of electrification on the continent increase. When we have increased electrification, we boost or we give the opportunity for micro economies to be established. That's now supporting further entrepreneurship. You are creating more jobs, more entrepreneurs, and progressively alleviating poverty on the continent. Energy intersects with a lot of, energy is the anchor. Without energy, you don't get foreign direct investment, because energy is required to sustain industry, right? And so the business case is compelling. The question is, how do we work together collaboratively to create a movement of educated, enabled women entrepreneurs to participate in the energy sector?
We need to wrap this up, Bertha, but I did want to just go back to the Gen X Theatre, if I could. Yes. If you could just expand a little bit on the sort of purpose and the aims of the Gen X Theatre.
The aim of the Gen X Theatre is to give young academics who are studying electrical engineering and any discipline that provides solutions to the energy sector an opportunity to present abstracts of their academic papers at international conferences. Why is that important? You expose them to potential employers directly. You expose them to potential business partners that they meet. You expose them to potential financial supporters for their academic journey or their entrepreneurial ventures. And now we've covered at least, I think, about 52 youngsters since 2015. Hmm. We've had youngsters presenting at the European Utility Week from South Africa, and meeting 100 other youngsters from that market and exchanging views,
ideas,
on electrification solutions for the continent. We've had some of our youngsters selected by Enel Foundation to participate in their energy program for youth in Ethiopia, and one of them subsequently represented the continent in Italy. These are incredible opportunities for youngsters.
What is the theatre component?
The theatre is actually a physical theatre. So we build a presentation theatre on the exhibition floor.
Okay,
and
my
goodness.
And this
is where young people present their papers to an international audience of delegates that attend. And that's what we do with Gen X. Some of the youngsters we've touched, they had never flown to Johannesburg before, had never stayed at a hotel before, had never attended an international conference before. They were the first in their family. And you will not believe what that does on the outlook of the individual, life outlook, and the faith in possibilities. And that's what we aim to achieve. It's a very simple concept, but it's a profound, it has a profound impact on young people in energy's lives.
It's incredible that you've stuck to that path that you chose all those years ago when you said you were going to be the best that you could for not only yourself but for others.
True.
Quite true. Remarkable, Bertha. Thank you so much for your time.
We
could have chatted for hours, I'm sure. Yes. I want to wish you all the best with all of these projects, all these initiatives, your MBA that you're jetting off to get back into your books next week. Yes. And I look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Absolutely. I look forward to speaking to you when we have our first cohort in class.
That'll be fantastic. Well, she does have a lot going on, but you can hear the passion in her voice, particularly around the Women in Electricity and Power project that she's initiated, and her belief that women can play a role in the energy sector across the continent, in the transmission and distribution value chains, and that really the sky is the limit as far as that is concerned. And I suppose that could and should translate into other sectors as well. Please remember to support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesfromSA. Voices from SA is hosted on Audio Boom. You may subscribe to Voices from SA via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Radio Public, Deezer, or wherever you get your podcasts. Tell your colleagues, tell your friends, tell the world. Until next time, I'm Nicholas Claude. Cheers.